Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
On this week's Science Revolution, will America hold Trump and his enablers accountable for 400,000 unnecessary deaths? Is this manslaughter now that Trump brags that he actively ignored the scientific advice? Professor Richard Wolff is here on rising food prices and the impact on global unrest. If prices continue to rise on top of the pain of the pandemic, the world could be in for a bumpy future. Plus, vaccine passports? Let's just call them right to life or freedom passports. After all, what red-blooded, Nazi armband-wearing, Confederate flag-waving, capital-invading, gun-toting American patriot could possibly object? Stay tuned. Will America hold Trump and his enablers to account for 400,000 unnecessary deaths? Is this manslaughter now that Trump has gone out and bragged that he not only ignored scientific evidence, he did the exact opposite of what he was told? I mean, it's pretty straightforward stuff. And you say, well, 400,000? Why'd you say 400,000? Well, here's the deal. While Deborah Birx, I don't know if you caught the CNN special last night, Sean and I were just talking about it a few minutes ago. It was rather horrifying. And there were, you know, a lot of the things, for example, that the former CDC director was ruining the CDC. I don't know how to say it beyond that. That really didn't get brought up. But, you know, everybody was trying to say, well, I didn't do it. Trump made me do it, essentially. Or, you know, we thought we were doing the best that we could. But so Birx and her friends are on their kind of clean up our reputation tour right now. But, and she pointed out last night that, you know, she was getting significant pressure from Donald Trump and the people around him. And ultimately, after April, she just got cut out of all the conversation altogether. And I would say that was after April 7th. She didn't specify a date. But CNN clearly was mystified about what happened after the, you know, in the third week of April. How come everything changed? Or the second week of April? But she said that she was getting this pressure. Trump himself then went on Fox News a day or three ago and said that when Anthony Fauci told him how to save American lives, he said, I was doing the opposite of what he was saying, of what Fauci was saying. So this 400,000 number that I came up with, I didn't come up with. The Brookings Institution convened a convention over the last week, and solid scientific evidence was laid out that had Donald Trump simply done the simple stuff that, like, Australia was doing, or frankly, most other developed countries in the world were doing. Now, at this point in time, you can't kind of hold up some of the Western European countries as great models because they got caught flat-footed. I mean, the virus just burned through those countries before they realized what was going on. But the countries that, like Australia that said, or New Zealand or Taiwan or South Korea, they just said, hey, everybody, wear masks. Don't go into any public venues. We're going to shut down the bars and restaurants. They did that and, you know, very, very few deaths. So what these scientists said, well, this is how Reuters summed it up in the first paragraph of their story. Quote, the United States squandered both money and lives in its response to the coronavirus pandemic, and it could have avoided nearly 400,000 deaths with a more effective health strategy and trimmed federal spending by hundreds of billions of dollars while still supporting those who needed it. In other words, because Donald, and in fact, they go on to say, this is one of the researchers at the conference said, this guy is an economist with UCLA. He said, if by last May, the country had adopted widespread mask, social distancing, and testing protocols. By last May. Now, there was no dispute among anybody in real science by May that we had to have masks, social distancing, and testing. But Donald Trump, no, he was opposed to all those things. So anyhow, they say, if by last May the country had adopted widespread mass social distancing and testing protocols while awaiting vaccines, end of quote, we could have saved 400,000 Americans from death. And that doesn't even count all the people who got sick and now have long hauler syndrome, or had strokes and are not paralyzed, or have damage to their lungs and now have COPD. The Republicans, for some reason, have kind of forgotten their own history. Back in the 1940s, I mean, it was 1941 when, December 7, 1941, when Pearl Harbor happened. And Republicans were all in a froth about this. My dad, who was a teenager at the time, Pearl Harbor, he was a young teen, he joined the Army at 17 in 1944. He, to the day he died, was convinced that FDR let the Japanese attack us at Pearl Harbor because he wanted to get into the war against Hitler in Europe. He wanted to help out the British. He wanted to help out his friend Winston Churchill. Which you can argue that if it's true, that that might not necessarily be the most terrible thing. But the Republicans were all over this. They were like, you know, we've got to have accountability. I mean, this president might have created a circumstance, Pearl Harbor, and lied to us about it that led to the death of hundreds of thousands of American soldiers in World War II. What the hell happened? And so, you know, one of the four horsemen on the U.S. Supreme Court, his name was Justin Owen Roberts. He was the lead conservative on the court. He was one of the crankiest of the right-wing cranks. Actually, he was the guy who changed his mind in 1937 after enormous public pressure and started going along with the New Deal. But up until that point, he was one of the guys who said, no, you can't have child labor laws. That's a violation of the right to contract, for example. So anyhow, he headed up what was called the Roberts Commission in the late 1940s to investigate Franklin Roosevelt. What did he know and when did he know it? And after they looked at all the evidence, they said, well, it wasn't FDR. So they laid the blame on the two guys who were in command of Pearl Harbor. That was the Navy Admiral, his name was Husband Kimmel, and the Army General, his name was Walter Short. You know, whenever Republicans think that a Democrat might be to blame for anything, they want accountability. The George W. Bush administration used private servers throughout the 8 years of their administration to conduct government business. And then as George Bush was leaving office, 22 million emails were deleted from that system and have never been seen since. But, you know, in comes Barack Obama. He makes Hillary Clinton his Secretary of State. She sets up a private server in her home just for her personal emails so that she can keep her personal emails separate from her government email. And they find out about this and they go absolutely bat guano crazy. Oh my God, 30,000 missing emails? What was so astonishing to me during that entire period was that the media seemed to have forgotten that George W. Bush lost 22 million emails and Dick Cheney and all their senior officials. But they went nuts. This investigation covered 3 years, cost our country tens of millions of dollars, and in the end she was cleared of all the charges. But they had to hold her accountable for something. So when four Americans died of Benghazi in the years after the State Department had asked for extra funds to harden the Benghazi outpost, and Republicans in the United States Senate said, no, no, that's big government spending. We're not going to appropriate the money. After that happened, we had four Americans die at Benghazi. It was accountability time again. And again, years of investigations into Benghazi, dozens of congressional or over a dozen congressional investigations, hours of testimony, and at the end, nothing. You know, Republicans even held Richard Nixon accountable. It wasn't Democrats who went over to the White House to tell him he had to leave town. It was a bunch of Republicans led by Barry Goldwater. So now we have a Republican former president who made intentional decisions, I would say politically motivated decisions, in the face of all the evidence that, according to scientists this week, led to 400,000 Americans dying who did not have to die. What are we going to do? I think this is manslaughter, at the very least, of 400,000 people. I think it's mass murder. I think that there should be accountability. I think that there should be a criminal trial. And I realize, you know, sovereign immunity is going to make that very, very difficult. So, you know, lacking that, at least, at the very least, we have to have congressional hearings and there needs to be a commission looking into this. But I would love to see a court looking into it as well. I mean, over 500,000 Americans have died, and 400,000 of them, according to these scientists, did not need to die. So, Donald Trump kills people, Derek Chauvin kills a man, and God only knows what he did before this. I'm pretty sure that evidence can't be brought into court. Accountability for Chauvin? We'll see. I'm skeptical, but, you know, hey, it's a diverse jury, and it seems like a slam dunk case. We'll see. Food prices have been rising for months. There's some fairly alarming stories about this on Financial Times, this one from Axios. Past spikes, they note, in food prices or in the price of food staples have been connected to periods of social unrest. I think, you know, we all remember when the price of wheat went up in one of the Arab Spring countries. That led to that vendor catching himself on fire and tipping off the whole Arab Spring thing, or at least that was what was attributed to it. Global food prices rose 2.4% just in February, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization's Food Price Index. So what does this mean in the context of economics? What's the relationship between food prices and political unrest? Professor Richard Wolff is not only a genius economist, but also an astute political observer and observer of these kind of macro issues. His most recent book, The Sickness is the System: When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. He's the economist. He's the co-founder of democracyatwork.info and rdwolff.com with two Fs. You can tweet him at Prof. Wolff. Professor Wolff, welcome back. What are your thoughts on this?
Think of it as a thermometer taking the temperature of how healthy we are or are not. It is now a kind of reality that the mass of people already feel. They use the phrase, it's just too much. Whether it's COVID or the crash of our capitalist economic system or the fires in California or the cold weather collapse of the electric system in Texas, you have too many problems. And I haven't mentioned the Me Too movement or the Black Lives Matter issues and police violence. You're seeing a society that has accumulated problems, but constantly congratulates itself that it has made this or that progress, not understanding that progress is not enough. The progress has to be measured by and adequate to the level of the problem. And so here we have food. If you have a global economic crash, if you have growing population, which we do, and if you have disrupted global supply lines, which we do, then you have to take extraordinary action or else, among other things, food prices rise. And you're at a point of the toleration of masses of people that you don't have a lot of slack left in keeping this economy stable. That's why it's quite correct for you to point out, for Axios to point out, the parallel between rising food prices and what that does. Let's remember, we are now in what is called a K recovery. The people at the top are doing pretty well. The mass of people at the bottom are not. Well, rising prices for food hit the people in the middle and the bottom the hardest because they're the ones who spend the biggest portion of their income on food. So you are making people that are already disadvantaged in the economic realm now going to be facing unaffordable food. They've already found their rent unaffordable. I mean, at some point, this accretion of problems will be one too many. And that famous last straw on the camel's back will have been reached.
In Tunisia, when Mohamed Bouazizi was the guy who poured gasoline on himself and lit himself on fire on the 17th of December 2010, which tipped off or started the Arab Spring. That was in response to an almost doubling of the price of wheat in Tunisia, which was in response to apparently the desert moving south. This also created the crisis in Syria, where you had farmers from the north. The desert had moved south 100 miles over a period of about a decade, and farmers just literally lost their farms and they ended up in the big cities in Syria. And that was the initial opposition to Bashar al-Assad, you'll recall, to his government. Do we have any sense of where these tipping points occur, how much of a price increase it takes, how big the population of a country has to be that is in poverty or is at the midpoint of poverty? You talked brilliantly about how this accumulation or accretion of all these different insults or assaults, you know, on people. Is there any, other than the kind of general principle, do we have any indicators, any warning signs? Does the UN say, oh, look out, this country's at risk because, you know, this particular metric has been hit? Have we gotten that granular or that sophisticated in understanding how this all works?
Yes, we have, although the approach is a little different. What people have begun to notice is that many of these problems having to do with food are of quite some standing. For example, you pointed out ecological shifts, climate change as having had that impact in Syria and Tunisia and places where farmers are affected. Well, that's happening all over the world, number one. Number two, the disruption of supply lines that move food or the equipment that enables farmers to grow the food, that has also been building over time. And here's what we know. A variety of countries have already hit the so-called tipping points and have only stayed okay by providing one or another kind of governmental support for the food business. I'll give you a couple of examples. In Russia, tariffs and special kinds of export controls have been added so that enough of the food grown in Russia stays in Russia so it can feed its people, not that that's enough. An even starker example is India, which has used an enormous amount of government resources in directly subsidizing the price of food because it otherwise would have become unaffordable, and millions and millions, India is a very large country, of its poorest people, and it has an enormous poor population, would have been unable to afford enough food to eat. Even here in the United States, one of the components of the latest bill passed, COVID relief bill, is to extend the availability of food stamps. And whatever critics say, one of the reasons is that the statistics in the United States of what we euphemistically call food insecurity, i.e. hunger, have also been rising for some time now. And whatever the exact tipping point is, we are already there because governments don't have enough money in many parts of the world to continue the kinds of supports and subsidies. And there are a number of countries who've scheduled to stop them at the end of March or the end of April or at the end of the summer harvest. And boy, let me tell you, if that happens, if they can't afford the subsidies, then you're going to see sudden spikes in food prices, much larger than what we've already seen, as these government supports are phased out. So we're already far along, which is why minor adjustments, a little bit here or there, even the extension of the American food stamp program, is way too little and already too late.
What should America and what should the UN be doing?
You have to deal with priorities. You know, the priority of dealing with our health problem, we didn't pay attention to what that priority was, and we've paid a bitter, bitter price. The same applies to food. You have to systematically reorganize the whole farming, food raising, food processing, food transportation. You either do that as a massive priority, and neither Republicans nor Democrats are doing anything like it, or else you're just waiting until this new additional problem adds to all the other ones, and we sit here, you and I, talking about the urgency as it gets worse.
Brilliant. Professor Richard Wolff, Prof. Wolff over on Twitter, democracyatwork.info over on the internet. Professor Wolff, thanks so much for being with us. It's great talking to you.
Thank you, Tom.
Always fascinating.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital.
Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
I wanted to get into the so-called vaccine passports. This has become kind of a touchstone for conservatives. They're quite hysterical about this. Louise and I have been kicking this around for a week now. Is what do we know about this? What can we learn about it? So finally, we pulled it all together yesterday and published this to HartmanReport.com. You know, I think the question, if you want to call it a question, really is, what do we do to save America? I mean, this question here is about ensuring the safety of the American people and getting our country back on track so that you and I could go to the theater again or to a restaurant or to a bar or to a sporting event and not worry that we are getting or passing along a deadly disease, particularly to somebody who, for actual reasons, you know, there are some people who just can't take the vaccine because they're immune compromised, or, you know, there's questions about pregnancy right now, although they seem to be being resolved, or because of their age, the very young children. The vaccines are all certified to 16 or 18 years old, but not below that. And so I realize they're testing them, but how do we get through this? And my suggestion is that we do need these vaccine passports. We need them right now in the United States. The problem is, you know, what about the crazy right-wingers? You've got Marjorie Taylor Greene out there right now saying that, well, this is her quote, Joe Biden's mark of the beast, these vaccine passports. Now, the federal government doesn't even have one, right? They have them in Israel. They have them in Denmark. Denmark is rolling, in the process of rolling them out. Israel's had them for a few weeks now. You want to go to a bar? You want to go into a concert? Cool, they're open. Show your passport. It's a digital pass that has a code on it that can be read by a QR code reader. So just like, you know, you go into the movie theater nowadays, they check that QR code on your ticket. I've been using, actually, back a year ago when I was going to movies, the Regal Cinemas here, you get it on your iPhone or even on my iWatch. There's the card. I've used my watch to get into the theater. I've used my watch as a boarding pass to get on airplanes. This is not complicated technology anymore. But what we're seeing is that the Republicans are flipping out on this. The headline over at the Washington Post, I think, says the entire thing. The dangerous game Fox News is Tucker Carlson is playing on vaccines. Tucker does his shtick. You know, his shtick is, well, I'm just wondering. I'm just asking the question about these vaccines. Right. If we're going to open up, we've got to take on this Republican death cult. Freedom should not mean the freedom to force other people to get sick and die all alone in a hospital ICU hooked up to a bunch of breathing tubes. I mean, that should not be what we define freedom as. It's crazy. I think that right now, all across the United States, you know, the Supreme Court has certified the right of businesses to have the freedom to, for example, refuse service to anybody based on shoes, on shirt, on whether or not they're gay, for God's sake. Why can't businesses say, no, you don't have a vaccine. I don't want you in my store. I don't want you in my bar. I don't want you in my restaurant. I don't want you in this office building. You can't come back to college. You can't get into this stadium. This theater isn't going to let you in unless you can prove that you're vaccinated. You can do it by maybe having a laminated vaccine card, although those are actually, you can, you know, they're for sale on the internet right now, phonies, which makes it a little more difficult. But there's a bunch of organizations right now that are working on this. The Ad Council just rolled out a new It's Up to You campaign. And I saw a clip of it this morning on MSNBC. And, you know, it's a sweet little ad campaign that talks about, you know, if we all get vaccinated, we can get back to normal. And won't that be wonderful? And yes, that will be. But it's going to take more than an ad campaign. We're going to have to take names and kick ass. It's going to have to be, hey, idiot, get vaccinated or don't come in my store. Now, this is going to be a challenge. 59%. The last survey that was done in Texas among Republicans in Texas. 59% of them said that they have doubts about the vaccine and probably won't be vaccinated. Half of all the Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives, half of them, where literally you could just walk downstairs to the physician's office, the House physician's office, and say, give me a shot, and they give you the shot, right? It's right there. It's on demand. It's continuously available. Half of the Republicans have said, no thanks. We don't want the vaccine. This is why a quarter of members of Congress are not vaccinated. It's half of the Republicans. So put the vaccine passport to get into the House of Representatives. People are freaking out, particularly on the right, and there are some on the left as well. And I understand that there are privacy concerns around this sort of thing, and we have to do this appropriately, etc. But, you know, this idea of a vaccine passport, this is not a new idea. I got my first vaccine passport in 1979. I was going to Kenya, Uganda, and Somalia on behalf of the Salem International Organization. The year that I started doing international relief work, I did it for about a decade with that organization, traveled around the world, and I had to find a local doctor who was certified by the World Health Organization. I got a bunch of shots. As I recall, it was yellow fever and diphtheria and dengue and something else, typhoid, and God, those shots hurt. I was sick as a dog for a couple of days. It's a yellow card. And that thing was in my passport for 20 years. And it got me in and out of third world countries on three different continents. There's nothing new about this, a vaccine passport. In fact, now our kids have to have a vaccine passport. When my kids were young, 40 years ago, going to school, the school just took your word for it if they were vaccinated. Well, now you've got to send along the actual physical proof. It's a vaccine passport. The Biden administration is working with 17 different groups, which is why Newsmax White House correspondent calls the idea totalitarian communism. Maybe we should put photos on these vaccine passports and mandate that states have to use them as voter ID. That would blow up their heads, right? No, but seriously, IBM's working on one of these things. The UN Office of World Tourism, CLEAR, as I mentioned earlier, Israel and Denmark. I mean, this is the ultimate statement of freedom, right? The freedom not to get sick. I think we should call them freedom passports. On the other hand, it's also the ultimate statement of the sanctity of life. We're protecting life. Maybe we should call them right to life passports. What do you think? Back in the 80s, you had restaurants that were experimenting with smoking and non-smoking sections, and in some cases, entire restaurants went non-smoking. Businesses should be able to do the same. I'm not saying it should absolutely be mandated, although that's my personal opinion. Even the NFL has weighed in on this. They're in favor of it. Well, over in the UK, this debate is raging as well. This Harry Cole writing for The Sun, one of the British tabloids. The headline, pubs will be allowed to ban boozers who haven't had COVID vaccine, and punters may have to show proof of jab. Jab is the British expression for vaccine, or, you know, this particular vaccine for COVID. The article, Boris Johnson told members of Parliament yesterday, quote, it may be up to the landlord, end quote. In other words, we're going to let the free market decide, adding the concept of vaccine certification should not be totally alien to us. And then they note, in Israel, the lure of pubs and bars was used to encourage younger people to have the vaccine. See, that's also a really important part of this, is that if you want to get everybody in the country vaccinated, make it so that you can't get on an airplane unless you have proof of vaccination. And not proof that you bought on, you know, eBay or the dark web or some website that's selling skeezy knockoff vaccine certificate. Because the ones that they have right now, I mean, this one that I got, this is an official CDC card. You know, it's all black and white. It's all just type on paper. It would take probably somebody who was decent with Photoshop maybe a half hour take a picture of that thing and reproduce it in a way that looks just identical and just get the same card stock and print it. You could print it on a laser printer and nobody could tell the difference, particularly if it's laminated. So, you know, we've got to have something that's a little healthier than that. But I would love to go to a theater and, you know, keep in mind, I'll be fully vaccinated after the middle of April. And my next shot is on April 11th, by May, by my birthday, you know, the first week of May. I'll be able to walk into a theater and sit down and know that, you know, the odds are even if the guy next to me has COVID, I'm not going to die from it. But I'll still have about a 10% chance of getting it. And I'd frankly rather not get COVID, even a mild case, because even the mild cases can produce bad consequences. Plus, if I got COVID and I didn't even know it, an asymptomatic case, which seems to be the majority of what happens to people who've been vaccinated when they actually do get infected, I don't want to be the guy who carries it to somebody else, you know, who's breathing on the guy sitting next to me on the other side in the theater who can't get a vaccine because he's immune compromised or hasn't gotten a vaccine. You know, we haven't yet hit that critical mass. So how do we deal with these mask holes? How do we deal with these people, these right wingers who are asserting that a vaccine passport, oh my God, that's terrible. They are, by the way, the same people who say, oh, you want to vote? Your papers, please. And more than one. Just one kind of ID? Sorry, that's not enough to vote. These are the same people who are saying, how dare you? God forbid. This is unbelievable. This is a communist plot. How dare you tell me that I have to prove that I've been vaccinated before I can come into your restaurant or your bar or your theater or your stadium? How dare you? Seriously. I mean, we've seen it, right? Rand Paul, a mask? I'm never going to wear a mask. This is nuts. The COVID research group, this is a group of 50, they call them backbench conservatives, in the British House of Commons. They're opposed to this, right? Because they're researching COVID. Probably on YouTube. And they say, we must not fall into this ghastly trap. First, they said we'll need them to watch the football, and today it may be papers for the pub. So, you know, if the Supreme Court has said over and over and over again that if I own a bakery, for example, and I have a deeply held belief that being gay is wrong, then I can refuse to bake a cake for that couple that are getting married. Okay. If the Supreme Court says that private businesses, based on their deeply held beliefs, or even religious beliefs, can discriminate against people, can say, no, I'm not going to let you into my store, I'm not going to sell products to you, I'm not going to, you know, whatever it may be, then why can't business owners say, you know, it's my deeply held belief that I'd like to stay alive, damn it! I don't want my business or my bar or my restaurant or my club to be a vector of disease that's going to kill more people. I mean, you leave that to Ron DeSantis and Kristi Noem, right? The governors of Florida and South Dakota and Greg Abbott down in Texas. Let them bring people in without masks and without vaccines and mix it all up and spread death around. Those three politicians are probably responsible for the deaths of tens of thousands of people who did not have to die. I don't know how they can sleep at night. I don't understand how they can look themselves in the mirror, much less continue to have a political career. But individual businesses should be able to say, no, you prove to me that you've been vaccinated before I let you into my place because I am a believer in the right to life, my own right to life, and my customers' right to life. It's a deeply held belief. In fact, it's a religious belief. So let's call them right to life passports, freedom passports. I think we need to stop even referring to them as vaccine passports. Freedom passports? Right to life passports? Is there another phrase that I'm missing? I'm just so over it with these mask holes, with these people who, you know, run around going, hey, my right to not wear a piece of cloth over my face is more important than your right not to die from COVID. Give me a break. That's all for this week's Science Revolution. You can find the video portions of the Science Revolution on YouTube and check out our Facebook page.